Hello, my friends. Happy New Year. Happy New Year, everybody. Tashi Delay. Namaste. I hope everybody's well today. I want to wish everybody a happy new year. I hope everybody's healthy and happy and feeling good. And I want to talk a little bit about the one thing that must be included in all of our Dharma practices. And really, this one thing should be included in all spiritual activities. And this is something that in the field of Buddhism, there's so many different teachings that we receive. We receive, Buddhists are known for having these really long lists. And it's kind of funny because even some of the teachers laugh about how many lists there are. Yeah. There's so many lists. Buddha himself was extremely meticulous. He was a very meticulous person. And so the field and study of Buddhism is extremely vast, and there are infinite number of teachings. And the problem is when there are so many teachings, when there are so many teachings, people may be a little confused about what they should be practicing and what they should be studying. Hello, Namge. Nice to see you. Hello, Susan. Happy New Year. So, a spiritual practitioner, and I really, to be honest with you, I think that what I'm going to share applies to all spirituality, all traditions, all religions. Whether or not they teach it this way is a different discussion, but I think this is applicable to anybody. And I would even say, if you're a different religion, this information can benefit you, bring more happiness, bring more joy, bring more contentment. So what is this one single thing that all spiritual practice really should have? This one thing is the reduction of self-grasping. Hello, Per. Nice to see you. The reduction of self-grasping is very, very critical and very important. And if our Dharma practice or even our spiritual activities don't reduce self-grasping, then we have a big problem. And really, I should add self-cherishing. So self-grasping is the belief in an inherently existing self, an independently existing self, an intrinsically existing self, which is really to say a self that exists independent of causes and conditions, independent of parts, and independent of the mind that conceives and labels it. So this belief in self-grasping is a belief in a self that exists from its own side, independently and inherently. As a result of this self-grasping, there's this other monster that's a big problem, a demon, a destroyer of peace and tranquility, and his name is self-cherishing. So you could say self-grasping is like the foundation for all suffering, and it's based upon ignorance. And then self-cherishing is the second monster. So you've got the monster of self-grasping, right? Then you've got the monster of self-cherishing. So if we are practicing the Dharma, hello, Cherub, namaste, Tashi Delay. If we are practicing the Dharma and our Dharma practice is not reducing selfishness, if it's not reducing self-grasping on one hand, which is the ignorant belief in an inherently existing self, it's not reducing that, then the Dharma that we're practicing has gone off track. And if it's not reducing self-cherishing, then the Dharma that we're practicing has also gone off track. Now, as it pertains to self-grasping, there are many different wisdom schools in the Dharma, right? Buddhism, as I mentioned before, is very rich, very, very deep. And when we study, cultivate, and analyze, and practice, and meditate upon wisdom, one of the first things that we're taught to do is to reduce self-grasping. What is this self? One has to ask the question, what is this self? And maybe I should say, what is this self? Because you really need to add a quotation mark to the self, because we should be very distrusting of this self. This does not mean that there's no conventionally existent self. Because if you hit me, then I feel pain. That's all. That's the only proof you need to know that there's a self here. There's this, you know, if you put your hand on the fire, it burns and you experience pain. Therefore, we know there's a self. But what we're calling into question here is how the self exists, right? And a lot of people are practicing the Dharma, and maybe you're new, or maybe you've been practicing the Dharma for a long time. But it's so important that we understand that the purpose of our Dharma, of course, the purpose is bodhicitta, right? To become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings, especially those beings that we dislike. The beings who are difficult, who are impatient, angry, they say things that make us upset. We should definitely have them in mind when we think of becoming a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. But back to what my point was, so we all have this bodhicitta, which is this goal to become a Buddha. What is the main obstacle to Buddhahood? The main obstacle is selfishness, self-grasping, self-cherishing. These are these two difficult monsters cause us all of our suffering. So what is this self? One thing that you have to understand is the object of refutation. Now, my line of thinking will come from the Prasangika Madhyamaka, ancient Indian school of wisdom, Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, several masters, and Tsongkhapa, Lama Tsongkhapa. These masters helped teach us and clarify the Buddha's teachings on dependent origination in a way that makes it very easy for us to understand as compared to after some of these Indian masters passed away. There was a great deal of confusion about wisdom, even within the Tibetan Buddhist schools. So when we ask, what is this self? We're analyzing our object of refutation, which is, or I should say, when we ask, what is this self? We need to look at how the self appears to us. Because if this belief in an inherently existing and independently existing self is the one thing we should be diminishing, because it's an obstacle and a barrier to our ability to become Buddhas, then we have to say, well, what is this self? Okay. We have to investigate, analyze, contemplate what this self actually is. So we have to understand when the self appears in our mind, we have a habitual instinct. Now, there's two types of self-grasping that the masters teach us that we need to diminish. One is philosophical self-grasping. Philosophical self-grasping is really only present in people that have been taught that there is an inherently existent self, and they've been given tenets and teachings and logic and wisdom about why there's an inherently existent self. That's not a big risk for most of us, so you can kind of push that aside. The second type, which is most important, is the habitual instinct to believe an inherently existent self. So the habitual instinct to believe in an inherently existing self is believing that there is a self that exists independent of causality. Here's one absurdity that would ensue if an inherently existent self truly existed. if this self existed inherently, by the way, I want to be clear. I'm not suggesting there's no self at all. There is a self. You can, the fact that you can hit my arm and cause me pain, that's proof enough that there's a self. But there's no independently existing self. There's no intrinsic, inherent, independent self that exists from its own side, independent of causes. So this self is an effect or a result of causality. So if the self existed inherently, then we would have no parents, because inherent existence means a permanent existence, unchanging existence, an existence that exists independent of causes and conditions. So if there was an inherently existing self, we would have no parents. We would have no mother and father, and we would never have been born. Okay? Obviously, each one of us has parents. We had a mother and father. That's how we were born. They conceived us, right? And therefore, we know that there is a conventional self, but there's no inherently existing self because we have a mother and a father. Also, if the self existed inherently, we would never age. We would always be the same age. We would never die. We would never even get sick, because to get sick would mean you would have to have wellness, and sickness and wellness are mutually dependent phenomenon. There's a terminological dependence on health and illness. You cannot have dualistic existences if the self exists inherently, because the self is a solid, permanent state. So if there was an inherently existent self, we would have no parents, we would never have been born, we would never age, and we would never die. We know these things do happen. So therefore, this is reason enough to disprove the self, okay? There's many other examples of why there's no inherently existent self. For me, the most simple reason is that I have two parents and I was born, and I'm a changing entity, and therefore the way that I actually exist as a self is conventionally. There is a conventionally existent self. It exists in the power of thought and terminology. It exists by the power of consensus. There's a consensus that we'll use the word self to define whatever this is. So there's a conventionally existent self, and that's fine. That's no problem. But the problem is that we believe in an inherently, independently, intrinsically existent self, and there simply is no independently existent self. And you can analyze the body and the mind to try to find this self, but there are many logical absurdities that arise when you analyze the body and the mind, or you could say the aggregates, to use technical Buddhist terminology or technical Buddhist lingo. So when we analyze the body and the mind, or the aggregates, to try to find an independently existent self, we really cannot find one. One simple way to analyze is there are five aggregates. And, or you could say there's the body and the mind and all the things that happen in the mind. If there was an inherently existent self, then you would need to have five selves, because there are five aggregates. Or if there was an inherently existing self, then those five aggregates would have to be singular. Neither of those work. So logically, we break, there's a logical break or fallacy or absurdity if the self exists inherently. So one logical absurdity is you would need to have many selves. But we know there's just this one self, okay? The second problem is if the body and mind, if the self existed inherently the same as the body and mind, propounding a self or saying there's a self would be meaningless. Because if the self was exactly the same as the body-mind in every way, then why would you need to use the word self? Because you could just say this body. You could just say the aggregates. So there's no need to add a head on top of a head. If you already have a head, why would you need to add a second head? So if the self is identical to the body, then why would you need to call it a self? Because you could just call it the body. So therefore, we know that there's no inherently existing self. There's no self independent, independently existent, inherently existent. So there's many, many, you know, explanations of how there's no self. And all of our, you know, all of our Dharma practice should be aiming directly at the reduction, destruction, and obliteration of this belief in an inherently existent self. Again, this does not mean that there's no self whatsoever. That would be nihilism. There is a self that exists conventionally. So the conventional existent self eradicates the false belief in nihilism, which is the belief that nothing exists. And why should we? You know, some people think emptiness is saying that nothing exists, and that's false. Phenomena do exist. And if you put your hand on a stove, you'll know pain is real. It's conventionally real though. Okay. So the conventionally existent self negates and eradicates the false view of nihilism. And then the lack of intrinsic existent self, or the lack of an intrinsically or inherently or independently existent self, this eradicates the false view of eternalism or substantialism. So the perfect middle way path is this understanding that there is no inherently existent self. It's empty of it. The self is empty of inherent existence, but there is a conventionally existent self. So all Dharma practice should be aiming at destroying this false thought of an inherently existent self. All Dharma practice should be reducing this belief in an inherently existent self. Because until we remove this evil thought from the root, we have to rip it out from the root. Until we remove this evil thought of the I or the self, I, me, mine, which is the mantra most of us are chanting day in and day out. Me, 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 my, I. This is our favorite mantra. My Geshe La, beautiful, precious teacher, Geshe Jempa Sonam, he used to teach us that we all have a PhD in self-cherishing and self-grasping. He would say, we don't have to practice this cherishing of the self. It's natural. We all have a natural doctorate, a natural PhD in self-grasping. And he was right. And that's what all of this Dharma practice that we study, contemplate, and meditate on, it has to be reducing a self. One way to practically apply this is to say that I should be letting go of what I want, because there is no inherently existent I. I is just a thought, a term, a word, you know, a syllable that you write. The capital I looks like this. It's literally just a syllable we write on paper, right? So this I, if we take just a moment to think about this, this I is nothing but a letter. We think it's more than that, of course, because we have habitually existing ignorance. But if you just take a moment to think about this, right? I is nothing more than a letter that we write on a piece of paper. We write this I, and then we believe that this I has some kind of inherent existence or independent existence or intrinsic existence. But once again, if the I existed inherently, intrinsically, or independently, then we would have no parents. We would never age and we would never die, because we would be permanent, because inherent existence is synonymous with permanence. But inherent existence directly opposes dependent arising. Inherent existence is strictly contradictory to dependent arising, cause and effect. So cause and effect obliterates the belief in inherently existent self. So all of this Dharma practice that we're doing should be helping us to let go of the self-cherishing thought, let go of selfishness, let go of needing to be first. So, you know, letting go of self-cherishing, letting go of this constant concern about me, I need to be right. I need to get my own way. I come first. And the problem is that is instinctually, it's an instinct inside of us. Deep inside of us, there's an instinct to be right, to be equal with everybody, to be protected, to get what we want, to be free of what we don't want. These are instincts. And you could argue these are biological instincts. So perhaps our past life karma has propelled us into this realm called Earth, whereby our instincts for grasping the self are really strong. So all of our Dharma practice should be helping us push down this self-cherishing. And one way that we can do that is we can make an aspiration to let go. What do I mean when I say let go? I mean to see all things as hallucinations or illusions, not take them so seriously. We can still carry out our daily activities and function as a human being in a worldly world. Function as a human being in the world with worldly responsibilities. But if we want to reduce this self-cherishing and the self-grasping, we have to reduce the habit pattern of clinging to what we want, clinging to what we need, thinking of ourselves first before others, thinking what I like and what I dislike is the most important thing. If we start to let go of that, then we can start to reduce and crush down this self-grasping and this self-cherishing. So all day long, if we set an aspiration, may I be free of this self-grasping and this self-cherishing. If we set a strong aspiration all day long for the rest of today, maybe when you wake up in the morning, all day long for the whole entire day, may I have the wisdom and clarity to let go of all of the things that I want, and may I have the wisdom and clarity to stop thinking of this self and to stop believing in the magical spell of an inherently existing self. So just setting this aspiration to let go. And then how do we let go? Yeah, when somebody says something we don't like, we let go. Don't even say anything. Just take a deep breath and let it go. Let it be. Don't try to control everything, right? So if we go through the day, letting go of the strong clenched fist in the mind, letting go of this and letting things be, letting things arise and watching the impermanent arising and ceasing all day long. Every word I speak arises and then falls. There's an arising and a fall, right? So you hear the arising and then the falling of the sound. And of course, we can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think. Those are the six sense bases. So if we're letting go of a visual form, letting go of sound, sight sounds, letting go of smells, letting go of tactile sensations, sight sound, hearing, smelling, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, letting go of all those, and maybe most importantly, letting go of thoughts. The problem with thoughts is that they constantly arise in the mind, and most of us don't have enough clarity to see every thought arise. And by the time it arises, it starts to dominate us with our likes and our dislikes. But if we firmly make this aspiration prayer every morning, may I let go of what I want. May I let go of everything that bothers me, and may through letting go of these things, may love, compassion, kindness, gentleness, tender concern for others, may all of these beautiful things flourish like a spring flower opening up for the sun. As a result of me letting go of the self-cherishing and the selfishness and the mischaracterization of what I am, believing that it exists independently and inherently. If the self existed independently and inherently, we would never need water. We would never need food. We would never need a roof over our head. We would be able to live out in the open in a 0 degree Arctic temperature. We would not need food, water, oxygen. If the self existed inherently, we would never need to breathe. Obviously, we do need to breathe. We need to eat. We need to sleep. We need clothing. We need shelter. The reason we need these things is because the self exists independently on causes and conditions. We need the proper conditions for the self to be alive and for the self to exist. So this self is dependent on a whole myriad of causes and conditions. So every day, if we strengthen our wisdom factor, and again, we make a strong aspiration, may every Dharma practice I engage in, and even may every worldly practice I engage in, reduce self-grasping, reduce self-cherishing, so that I can finally be free and I can be unbound from these horrible shackles, this conceptually created prison of I that's been causing all of my stress, anxiety, suffering, sadness, sickness. It's been causing our dissatisfaction for infinite eons, infinite lifetimes. So why would we possibly want to service our worst enemy, which is a belief in an inherently existent I? One of my favorite books is, I believe it's called The Essential Mind Training by Thubten Jinpa. There's a paragraph in the commentary on the 7-point mind training written by Sichilbu Choki Gyaltsen. And it goes like this. All my shortcomings and defects arise from grasping at selfhood. From beginningless time, I've held on to a self when there was none. Wherever I was born, though there was no self, I have grasped this body as the basis of my selfhood. Taking its side, I've resorted to rejection and affirmation, depending upon whether I deem something to be desirable or undesirable. In this way, I've accumulated negative karma and afflictions again and again, and this has caused me to endure the incalculable suffering of the beginningless cycle in general and the unfathomable suffering of the lower realms in particular. As long as I continue to take this self, as long as I fail to view this self as the enemy, I will continue to seek its well-being. As a result, I will suffer longer in the infinite cycle of existence than ever before. This self-cherishing brings all the suffering of the three times. Since this self has been my enemy and executioner from beginningless times, this means all of my deaths in the beginningless cycle of existence were not caused by anyone, but rather they were caused by this self. And where does this self exist? It exists in my own heart. That paragraph is like this super powerful depiction of the whole entire samsaric existence that we find ourselves in. So this self-cherishing and this self-grasping are responsible for all of our suffering. If you have an argument with somebody, the only reason that you can have this argument is because of you're holding on to what you want. And the reason you're holding on to what you want is because you think, if I don't get this, it's going to be bad. It's actually really that simple. I want. We're like cavemen and cavewomen. I want. And you just, there's just this internal feeling, right? When we have a disagreement, it's just like a fire that just naturally arises every time something unpleasant comes before us and we kind of allow it to dominate us. Imagine being free from that. Imagine if you just had constant peace, constant tranquility, constant joy, constant laughter. There's a post I share of the Dalai Lama laughing, and his laughing is infectious. it's completely contagious. Yeah, it's like you see him laughing and you just start laughing because he's just so beautiful and full of joy and you know, loving energy and playfulness. That's something that one Lama once said, one of the most important thing, most important teachings of the Tantra, the highest yoga Tantra and the Vajrayana is laughter, playfulness, not taking ourselves so seriously. So the single purpose of all Dharma is to reduce self-grasping and to reduce self-cherishing. So if I sit down and I meditate and I do breath meditation or I do mantra recitation, the goal, the underlying purpose of that should be to reduce and destroy the attachment to the inherently existing I, which does not exist. Because if the I existed inherently, we would have no parents. We would never die. We would never age. We would never need to drink water. We would never need to eat food because the self would exist independently. Inherent existence is independent existence. We are not independent. If somebody comes and shoots me, then this so-called Jason will no longer exist and I'll go on to my next body. I'll reincarnate. That would be because this body exists in dependence on causes and conditions. We need the appropriate causes and conditions in order for us to survive and to be alive. So every Dharma practice, and for that matter, if you're a Dharma practitioner, we should try to make all of our worldly activities support the eradication, reduction, diminishing, and elimination of the belief in a self. And as a result of us believing less in this I, we will begin to be more free. We'll have more freedom, more joy. We'll be more like Dalai Lama, who just laughs. This loud, bellowing laugh without a care. We can begin to taste that if we stop chasing what we want so intensely. And, you know, one of the easiest ways to get closer to this freedom is to simply let go. Whatever we want, it's kind of like a clenched fist inside of the mind. Whatever we want is like this really tight fist in the mind. And it could be what we want or it could be what we don't want. If we let go of what we're desiring and just let things be what they are without trying to control them, without getting mad when we don't get what we want, without getting mad when we fail to get what we want or when something we don't like happens, if we let go of those things, if we let go of somebody saying something to us that we don't like, if we let go of the other political party that we dislike, if we let go of that, whatever it is that we take issue with and that we take so seriously, if we let go of these things, then we will stop watering the karmic seeds that we're producing. The reason that we have this strong addiction to the inherently existent self is because we keep watering the seeds for the self. If you keep watering the seeds for weeds that grow in your yard, you're going to continue to have weeds. But if you cut the weeds and pull them out at the root, they don't grow back. And so the way to eradicate self-grasping at the root is we have to rip it out. And we can do that by analyzing the wisdom that destroys the false belief. It destroys the ignorance that falsely believes in an inherently existent high. And then conventionally, we can just keep letting go and understanding that everything exists in a dreamlike, hallucination-like, illusion-like, echo-like way. Everything appears one way and exists in a totally different way. So all of our Dharma practice should be strengthening wisdom and strengthening the understanding that everything exists conventionally independent upon causes and conditions. Everything exists as the effect of a previous cause. The more we contemplate this, the easier it is to just let go of our desires, our aversions, the easier it will be to let go of this constant need to be right. How many people do you know that always have to be right? The only way you can really have an argument or ill will with somebody is if you dig in and you need to be right. If you let go of the need to be right and you let the other person win, there can't be an argument. There can only be peace. They'll be happy and you'll be happy. But you have to be willing to let go. Langri Thongpa, the author of the Eight Verses Mind Training, one of the stanzas in his poem is, "Whenever I interact with others, I will view myself as inferior to all, and I will train myself to hold others superior from the depths of my heart." I'll say that one more time. "Whenever I interact with others, I will view myself as inferior to all, and I will train myself to hold others superior from the depths of my heart." We're talking about intentionally letting somebody else win, intentionally viewing ourselves as lower than them. And I believe that that's a manifestation of love. Langri Thongpa was a highly accomplished Kadampa master. He was a highly accomplished Lojong mind training practitioner. And if we can view ourselves as inferior to others and train to view them as superior in a way where we let go of what we need, even if we're smarter than the other person or if our position is higher, let's say you're a supervisor at work and these people work for you, or let's say you're a mother and they're your children, or you're a lama and they're your student. If we view them as higher, superior from the depths of our heart, then what's going to happen is it's going to eliminate pride. It's going to eliminate the addiction and the clinging and the grasping at the self. And once we remove and rip the self out at the roots, then we have peace, tranquility, joy, appreciation, gratitude, love, compassion, happiness, generosity. These things all come when we remove the self-grasping that so fundamentally destroys our peace. Our very reason for being here in samsara is because we believe in this I. And then we act out all of our karmic habits and propensities that just continue to make the I stronger. So all of our dharma practice must crush this self-cherishing belief. Again, I'm not suggesting that there's no self. There's a conventionally existent self, but it doesn't exist the way that we think it does. So if all of our dharma practice eradicates the belief in an inherently existent I, and if all of our dharma practice reduces self-cherishing, which takes the self to be so important, the result will be a flourishing of positive qualities, an ocean of beneficial qualities that love sentient beings, adore sentient beings, cherish sentient beings. We will engage in generosity, kindness, love, compassion, bodhicitta, appreciation, gratitude, tender kindness, love. We will feel the need to hug everybody. Our enemy, the thought of enemies will reduce in our mind. So there's so many benefits to this path of dharma. But if we're practicing it wrong, then the benefits can never arise. If we're practicing dharma and then we get up from the cushion and we're yelling at people and we have if our opinions are very, very strong and we really, really need to be right, we're not practicing dharma correctly. If we practice dharma correctly, then our opinions start to dissolve by themselves. And then it will become easy to be joyful. Okay, I think I've ranted too long. I love you all. As a result of this dharma practice, may all mother sentient beings benefit. May all mother sentient beings and their suffering be completely eradicated. May joy, happiness, love, compassion, generosity, patience, gratitude, peace, contentment arise in the hearts of all sentient beings. May we view all sentient beings like our own mother or our own children. And may, most of all, may love, which is the wish for others to be happy, arise in the hearts of all sentient beings. With this, I dedicate the merit of this long Dharma rant. And I hope for the peace and contentment of everybody, not only on planet Earth, but on all planets and all realms of existence. May all beings have happiness. With this, I dedicate the merit to all of you. I love you, my friends. Big hugs. May you have happiness, health, contentment, wealth, and may love and compassion for all sentient beings arise in your heart spontaneously.